Tape 1, side 2, continued.
When you look
you want to continue about not having gone to a ball game?
Yeah, I was saying I haven't had a chance to, let alone not to go to a ball game, I haven't had a chance to watch a ball game on TV. And I regret that I haven't been to a concert. It's not because I don't want to go. It's just as every once in a while, though, there's a lecture in town that I just see that I have to go, so I do get away, but that's very limited.
You have to budget your time. There's nothing else you can do.
Like money.
Are you called upon at any time for any ritual participation?
Very little. Just whatever ritual participation is at the little show that I attend. And it's a kind of informal thing. But haven't been involved in any kind of actual rabbinic practice.
What is your little show?
The little show is the Lubavitch Center. It's on the corner of Colbert and Whiteman. And it's not, doesn't have the capacity nor the attendance of some of the larger synagogues, but it's a very homey atmosphere, a small group of people. No formal rabbi, which is great.
And your social life centers around your family?
Pretty much so. Well, there's a group of friends that we get together whenever time permits. It's just that time doesn't permit that much. Yeah, there's little occasions. I mean, there's family, other family gatherings, their weddings, their synthesis, whatever. And we try to stay together as much as possible.
Do you want to come to your professional life? You finished in Chicago, and then what did you do after Chicago Baptist?
All right, when I was ordained as a rabbi in 1951, came back to Milwaukee and served as assistant rabbi to my father. And even though I started medical school in 1955, I kept functioning in that capacity as long as I was in Milwaukee. I was through medical school and through internship to whatever degree time permitted. In 1959, I graduated medical school and took an internship at Mount Sinai Hospital in Milwaukee. Looked around for good residencies in psychiatry and was looking for two ingredients. One, a good residency, and secondly, in a community where there would be a day school for my children, because I wanted my children to have a day school. New York was essentially ruled out because, having grown up in a rather quiet town like Milwaukee, I have never been able to adjust to the enormous pressure of New York. I just do not feel comfortable in New York. So New York was out, and that left several communities to consider, and Pittsburgh had an excellent residency and did have a two-day school, so Pittsburgh was it, and I came to Pittsburgh in 60, did my residency at Western Psychiatric Institute at the University of Pittsburgh for 3 years, then stayed on for 2 years as a staff psychiatrist at Mary State Hospital. That time, when I finished my stay at Mayview, I was going to go back as an instructor on the staff of Western Psychiatric Institute. And at that time, Dr. Brosen, who was the chief of psychiatry at Western Psych, called me in and he said that he feels that the Western Psych, being the educational institute, does have a moral obligation towards St. Francis, because St. Francis has been the hospital that has provided most of the psychiatric services to the community. You know, Pittsburgh is rather unique in one respect. I don't know how well it's known. Every other major city has a municipal hospital. Bellevue, New York, Cook County in Chicago, Los Angeles General, right, Philadelphia General. Every city, major city in the United States has a public hospital. The only exception is Pittsburgh. There's something in the Pittsburgh Charter that does not permit the city to have, or the county to have a hospital. Now, the consequences of that were felt in the area of mental illness. For many, many years, mentally ill patients were totally undesirable. And no hospital wanted to treat the mentally ill, no hospital wanted to treat the alcoholic. In every other city where there was a municipal hospital, all the private hospitals could send the undesirable patients to the municipal hospital, and that's their problem to deal with because they're the public hospital. Well, Pittsburgh didn't have that because there was no municipal hospital. All hospitals were privates, right? So who's going to be stuck with the undesirables? What happened was that the Sisters of St. Francis said, well, you know, this is a service that they felt their mission to perform. And so they developed a Department of Psychiatry and a large alcoholic unit taking care of people who nobody else wanted to take care of. I had been at St. Francis as a resident in 1960, and I saw the overwhelming workload that was there. And so when Dr. Brosen told me in 1965 that, you know, we owe something to St. Francis because it has done so much for the psychiatric community, and St. Francis does not have a clinical director for its Department of Psychiatry, and suggested that I consider the position. And I looked at him, didn't say a word, and he said to me, "You think I'm a sugar, huh?" So I said, "You said it, I didn't." He said, "Well, go talk with him anyway." So I went to meet Sister Adele, simply to placate Dr. Brosen, without any intention that I am going to take that impossible position, because it was an impossible position. Sister Adele is a very unusual person. But among other things, I told her, "Look, Sister, I have a long time been planning that I would take my family to Israel, and I was talking to her, must have been somewhere around March of 65, and I said, I'm going to be finishing my training in July 1st, and I'm going to be going, our plan is to go with the university and teaching, but I don't want to start there for 2 months. I want to take the family and spend 2 months in Israel. So I'm not even going to be available until September or October." And Sister said, "We've waited this long, we'll wait 2 months longer." And I said, "Sister, I know this hospital, and I know the demands on the physician, and the person who's in the place of clinical director has to be available at all times, even if not on the premises. I cannot be available at all times because on Friday, an hour before sunset, my telephone goes off, and it doesn't come on again for 26 hours. And I'm simply not reachable." She said, Sister said, "We would never think of disturbing you on your Sabbath." No. And whatever arguments I gave her, she knocked down. And for whatever reason it was, I guess it was destined to be that way, I took the position, thinking that I'll stay there for a year or two until they'll be able to locate someone else, and that year or two turned into 20 years. There was a lot of advances done in St. Francis during those 20 years. St. Francis used to have a reputation as being a dumping grounds, used to have a reputation as being a shock factory, and gradually St. Francis evolved into being a major mental health center. We opened up the first mental health center in Western Pennsylvania in January 1966 with a federal grant. And St. Francis has really grown enormously, and it's become a very fine psychiatric center. As part of the job that I had at St. Francis, I was seeing a large number of alcoholics, drying them out, and they would come in, stay for 4 or 5 days and go out, and so many of them would start drinking within days after they left. But I felt that we needed something to help the alcoholic get some treatment over and above his drying out period. And I suggested to the sisters that we develop a rehabilitation center. And we were able to find a provision that the FHA, as it was known then, would underwrite a mortgage and for a nursing home for alcoholics, and using that vehicle, we borrowed money, and we, in 1972, opened Gateway Rehabilitation Center out in Beaver County.
I'm from Aliquippa.
And since then, Gateway has in many ways grown. We are now sitting in one of Gateway's satellites. This is the, started off 2 years ago as an alternative method of treatment. All the treatment that was going on at Gateway was that a patient would come in for 28 days or stay there for the full 28 days. Now, that still goes on a great deal, but we also have this center here where people come in for 3 weeks, 5 days a week from 9 a.m. till 3 p.m, and spend the full day as it is in therapy. There are outpatient groups and outpatient individual sessions going on here every night of the week. Gateway has gone very heavily into education, very heavily into family involvement, family treatment. We're now opening up a, beginning to build, we had a capital campaign, we're beginning to build a family house. In fact, the bulldozers just started there last week.
Where?
Out at the Aliquippa, what we call the big house. Okay. On the Aliquippa Gateway grounds. And then about a year ago or so, we, as a joint venture with Westmoreland Hospital, developed another rehabilitation unit out there to serve that segment of the county. Well, actually, it was Westmoreland County and neighboring areas. And that's worked out very well. And again, we've been progressing very well.
Are you in any way dependent on funds from private people?
Yes, we do have needs that are met by contributions, such as the whole capital campaign was raising close to $5 million from various foundations, corporates, individuals. There is a, Gateway is a really, truly nonprofit. And we were nonprofit to the point of almost closing down 6 times because we couldn't meet expenses. Fortunately, several years ago, we are now able to meet the budget, but you know, still very, very much a nonprofit, and it'll always be that way. But there are needs for many things that we do that we're dependent upon contributions that cannot come out of the patient per diem cost. So we have annual campaigns, smaller kinds of things, and then this major campaign that we just finished for $5 million.
You mentioned taking your family to Israel. When did you do that?
In July and August 1965.
67?
65.
Oh, 65. That was prior to the Israel war. Yes.
Yeah. And since then, I've been back many times.
Do you have any affiliations at all with the medical community in Israel?
No.
You talked a little bit, Dorothy, about the problem of alcoholism and drug abuse in the Jewish community. I know very little about that. Can you give some idea of that?
Well, unfortunately, we have lived with a myth that Shiger is a goy. And because of the enormous social rejection of alcoholism among Jews, maybe it was kept down. Maybe that helped keep it down. But whatever there was of it was covered up, a secret. Except for the very rare, blatant case of the town drunk, and almost every village had one of them, problem drinking was not thought of as being a problem, was never considered to be a problem even by experts in alcoholism, because Jews don't have that, they're sort of immune to alcoholism. And it wasn't until maybe about 20 years ago that people began to look around, and we're really not, that's one way in which we're really not different. And some studies began coming out about case finding of alcoholism among Jews. Certainly as drugs came on the scene, there never was anything to say a druggie is a goy, only a shaker is a goy. And as the age of the 60s came and kids got into drugs, Jewish kids got into it in very large numbers. It has remained a very significant problem. We don't know what the percentages are. I don't know that anybody could ever know, but there's a lot of Jewish kids who are having drug problems, as well as alcohol problems. And of course, with it coming up more in the open, we're becoming more aware of alcohol problems among the Jewish population as well. About 1980, several young people in New York, feeling the need for dealing with this problem, and these were people who, for their own reasons, either they were recovered themselves or were family members of recovery people, started off a group called JACS, the acronym J-A-C-S, stands for Jewish Alcoholics Chemically Dependent and Significant Others. And they're a quite active group that is an outreach and educational group. They have spiritual retreats twice a year, weekend retreats. And interest in many communities has developed so that Chicago has the JACS group, Pittsburgh has a JACS affiliate, Philadelphia has a JACS affiliate, Miami, it's now springing up everywhere. With speakers available, Sisterhood will call up, would like to have somebody talk to us about alcohol and drugs, and they'll have somebody go out. In that area, there's been a significant amount of progress. Still a lot of territory to cover. 6 years ago, there was not one AA meeting in a synagogue in Pittsburgh. We now have several. Rod of Shalom has a very fine meeting every week. Tree of Life has a meeting. Sinai has a meeting. Polizetic has a meeting. Maybe a fifth one that I don't remember. Beth Shalom had one, but folded, but there may be some interest in starting that one up again.
It's scary.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbi, I want to get back to discuss children with you, grandchildren. In raising your children, of course, they were, the environment was there. And by osmosis, they came into a magnificent heritage, no question about it. Did you have any difficulty with your children in keeping them in this particular area of growth?
Fortunately, I didn't, and that's probably because they were essentially protected from enormous exposure. I mean, sure, they were exposed to radio, to television, to the newspapers, to the media, to whatever else. But their association all day in the day schools was with Jewish kids and pretty much of their own Orthodox background. Shortly after Bar Mitzvah, they went off to yeshivas and or to seminary and stayed again with their own. And thank God, nothing. I did not have that. That doesn't mean that other families don't. But I was fortunate in not having it.
You didn't have to be concerned with permissiveness.
No.
Which is a very fortunate thing because it is in these constrained and restrained backgrounds that we often find the rebel coming.
Yeah, I'm sure that there have been families that. Now, I guess that this, other than by the grace of God, that a great deal depends also on how restriction is put across. There are some families, perhaps, that have a kind of restrictiveness that's dictatorial, disciplinary, and whatever. In the book Generation to Generation, I've described a little bit about what happened in my dad's home and the kind of ease that we had with, there was no question that there were demands made, right, now that we had to toe the line. But there was never any kind of tension from it. There was, wouldn't even have dawned upon me to, I had no need to rebel. I was not that dissatisfied. Dissatisfaction, rebellion comes from dissatisfaction. Not from disillusion with philosophy, you know.
Today, you will hear parents say, my child is very independent. Don't you think that independence too early takes from a child a measure of care and concern.
Well, it's so difficult to know what they mean by independence. For example, ancient Jewish culture had a child becoming independent at age 13. I mean, way back when, Jewish law was essentially physiologic. Puberty, there was no adolescence. You know? You're a child or you're an adult. Right? There's no in between. Adolescence is a Western civilization concept. I'm not sure that it's a good one. I think it leads to an enormous amount of confusion. You know, I'm too young to be held responsible and too old for anybody to control me. Right? And of course, what happened to the Jewish culture was, look, when you were 12 years old, 364 days, right, you were a child. Right? 5 minutes later, you're a fully responsible adult, and there is no juvenile court. Right? And anything you will do, you're going to be held as responsible and accountable as somebody who's 50 years old. So until the moment of bar mitzvah, your parents are totally responsible for you. And they're accountable. Somebody was always accountable. Right? Adolescence set up a kind of gray area where nobody's quite sure who's accountable. Right? I'm not sure that that's good. I think that indeed, you know, there's been swings of the pendulum. Way back when people were saying kids may want their independence, but they need limits and they want limits. And they're really afraid of independence. There's probably a great deal of truth to that, and this is why limits can be very helpful, but it depends as to why limits are being set. And where kids genuinely feel that the limits are good, and particularly where there is consistency. And one of the major problems in setting limits is that parents will set limits for the kids and ignore them themselves. And the kids pick up the double standards. Right? And that's totally worthless. I mean, dad gets smashed every once in a while and doesn't want the kid to drink. Right? The kid sees dad getting into the car after having some drinks, right? But the father will rave if the kid drives under the influence. There's a bunch of inconsistencies that happen. But if there's good consistency, I think that the limit setting can be very helpful. And the independence can actually be detrimental by taking away some of the things that you mentioned, some of the care and the love and the concern that goes along with it.
Do you find Pittsburgh a particularly good city to raise a family?
Pittsburgh's the best city in the country. I haven't been in that many cities, but wherever I have been, maybe it's just Parcel. Pittsburgh is unique in many, many ways. First of all, I would tell you that there have been the number of people who have lived in Pittsburgh and gone elsewhere, right? And there is no exception. Everybody has a longing for Pittsburgh. The years in Pittsburgh were just different. There are problems in every community, but the amount of internus and strife that is so characteristic, unfortunately, of Jewish communities is at a minimum in Pittsburgh. There's an awful amount of togetherness. At least I've seen it that way, and I feel it that way. That's in the Jewish community. And in the non-Jewish community as well, you know, Pittsburgh really is the number one city. It's the best place to live.
What do you mean by togetherness in the Jewish community?
Take a community like New York. There are segments of the Jewish community there, even among the Orthodox, that would not integrate with one another. Everybody's got their own little circle, right? And you don't cross over. The divisions of Orthodox Reform and Conservative in some communities are very vitriolic. And in Pittsburgh, yeah, there's divisions in there, but there's so many barriers that come down, and in spite of the fact that there are differences, there's just a much better feeling of togetherness than I have seen in any other communities that I've visited. Now, of course, New York suffers from everything else because perhaps of, what do they call it, the crowding factor, the congestion factor, whatever that, even if you put a number of mice in the same cage, you're going to run into congestion problems. And when you have 2 billion people living in the same apartment building, I mean, obviously you're going to end up with some problems. And it becomes much more every man for himself and dog eat dog, or at least that's the way I envision New York. But even in cities like Community, which is a wonderful, Milwaukee looks like a smaller city and a very wonderful community, there's not that kind of cohesiveness that I've seen in Pittsburgh.
Back then to say that I'd like to pick up by asking a few details that I missed. Where is it that Michael is a rabbi, your brother Michael?
In Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee.
In congregation, Beth Jehuda, J-E-H-U-D-A-H.
Thanks. I know that Ben has children. We didn't talk about that. I know because at our workshops, he led the one he talked about his kids. How many kids?
Eight.
Eight children. And how old is Sarah?
Sarah? She was born in 59.
All right. I can figure out from there. when was this Gateway satellite formed, opened?
This satellite was opened December 86, I think.
Great. And Family House then came after that at the Rehabilitation Center, and that was when?
My guess it was around the same time.
Oh, all right.
I don't know the dates exactly.
All right.
If you need any specifics on that, if you call it Gateway, don't mention it.
Okay. And you were talking about opening something in Westmoreland County.
Yes, it's been almost a year, or it's been over a year, that we opened a combination of a detox for drying out, a 28-day program like at Gateway, and also an abbreviated program. There's some people who stay in a 14-day program. And then we're trying to work out something there for a program like we have here at Green Tree, or a partial program.
Okay. And you also talked about the JACs. That's the Jewish...
Alcoholics, chemically dependent, and significant others.
Okay. Is that your baby?
No. I became interested in JACs when I found out of their existence in 1980 or 81, and I've been involved with them in one capacity or another ever since, but JACs was started independently by a group of people in New York.
Okay, fine. I think that takes care of a little pickup kinds of things that I hadn't clarified. Do you want to pick up from there?
Well, what I would like to ask, Doctor, do you get referrals from doctors?
Yes, a considerable number.
A considerable number, fine. Do you have any hospital connections at this time?
I'm on the staff of St. Francis and of Forbes Health System.
In what capacity, Doctor?
Right now it's essentially courtesy staff. I don't have the time to go down and to admit patients there, but if the need came up, I could admit patients there, and I do come in on consultation on both places.
When you were at St. Francis, what was your official title?
Clinical Director, Department of Psychiatry.
Doctor, is there a training center here?
Not formally at this time. We provide training in several ways. We have people fairly frequently coming out on internships. And these may be social work candidates who are placed for field placements. Or people in other areas of service providing where they want to learn about alcoholism and addiction, including medical students and psychiatric residents. And they can spend a varying part of time, depending on what their course will allow or require. And so we've had people stay with us anywhere for 4 weeks, as with medical students, anywhere up to a year for some social work placement. We also provide several lectures during the time of community education things or counselor education. But we are now in the process of probably forming a training institute, which is still in its early planning stages, but may become a reality within the next 6 months.
You mean an accredited training?
Yes, possibly university affiliated.
Uh-huh.
Right. So that's in the planning stages now.
What university would you be connected with?
I'm not sure. They're still negotiating with several of the universities.
They are still negotiating.
With the
end of side two, tape one, to be continued on tape two. When we were here